Welcome to the jungle. What's going on? My name is Jim Rome. A very good Thursday to you. What's cracking? Full show. Four interviews. An episode of the Jim Rome podcast already live. Don't listen to it just yet, but it is live. And Alvy is not here after doing what he did yesterday. The latest Alvin drop. He got some more play-by-play in. That's how Thursday sets up. The program is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. So if Alvin is not here, old man Ritt is pushing the buttons. Check him out. Telephone number is 1-800-636-8686. That number is good in the U.S., in Canada, wherever you are. Hit me up on Twitter at Jim Rome. All right, so the interviews look like this. I'm going to go back to back in hour number one. Coming up next segment, the head football coach at West Virginia, Neil Brown. Coming up at 40 past hour number one, Joey Logano, 2018 NASCAR Cup Series champ. In hour number two, he's back. The president of basketball operations for the Denver Nuggets, Tim Connelly. And then in hour number three, a fourth interview, a cornerback for the Washington football team, Jimmy Moreland. All of that and the telephone number is available. It is toll free. It's wide open. Make use of it. You got to get through Adam Hawk to get to me, get in rotation, get on hold. Best calls go right to the front. All right, so let me start with the NFL. Like, after week one of the NFL season, we are bound to get some overreactions. We know this. Like, if you're smart, you do not give in to them. You don't suddenly start saying things like, oh, Jacksonville, that's a team to watch. Jacksonville, they might run the table. Or the 49ers, man, they're in big trouble already. You don't give in to things like that. Now, let me move on to the state of Florida. We all know that when you think of Florida and everything in it, it's about as weird as it gets. We know this about Florida. And even knowing that, there are still some really bizarre things coming out of Tampa as it relates to Tom Brady. Bizarre things in the wake of Brady gifting the Saints a couple of INTs, including a pick six. In fact, within a few hours after that game ended, Brady takes right to Instagram and he posts this quote. Let me quote this now. In the midst of hate, I found there was, within me, an invincible love. In the midst of tears, I found there was, within me, an invincible smile. In the midst of chaos, I found there was, within me, an invincible calm. I realized through it all that in the midst of winter, I found there was, within me, an invincible summer. And that makes me happy. For it says that no matter how hard the world pushes against me, within me, there is something stronger, something better, pushing right back. End of quote. There you have it. The alleged GOAT has one bad regular season game, and he sprints to the gram to reference Albert Camus. I mean, I think it's not totally clear that Big Al wrote the entire piece, or maybe just a line or two. Either way, if this is the start of something new for Brady, where he jumps on Instagram after games to drop some French-Algerian existentialism, I mean, great, I guess. A little weird. But then again, Brady is a little weird. But if that quote is in any way related to losing on Sunday, then dude, you got to get your head straight. You got to get right. Man, it's one game. You don't need to be going all emo with it after one game. I mean, overreact much? You lose to the Saints, and now you're dropping quotes from Camus? This guy loses a game where he doesn't play that well, and then he rushes right in talking about an invincible smile. Like some high schooler who just discovered philosophy for the first time. Hey, dude, did you go back home and change into black clothing and listen to Radiohead all night long? Crying out loud, man. Take it in stride. You're the GOAT. Start acting like it. I mean, you throw a couple of picks and you run right to Instagram and start dropping absurdist philosophy trying to get right? What happens if you lose to Carolina on Sunday? Are we going to get some kicker guard? And if you think that was strange, if you think that was a strange overreaction, how about the reaction to what Bruce Arians had to say about Brady after that game? Remember, this is what his coach said after the game when Brady had those two interceptions.
One was a miscommunication between him and Mike, and he thought Mike was going down the middle. It's a different coverage. Mike read it right, and he should have been across his face, but Tom just overthrew it. And the other one was it was a screen pass with an outlet called, and he threw the outlet, and it was a pick six. Bad decision.
Right, so not a big deal at all. He said one was a miscommunication, and the other was, quote, a bad decision. Not exactly lighting the alleged toughest guy ever on fire. And it sure isn't like Arians came flying into the media room looking to burn that place to the ground the way the women's basketball coach at Michigan did back in the day.
That's how I feel. Damn sick and tired of getting out rebounded. 25 offensive rebounds. First time we block out, we get called for a damn block out. We're pushing people. Meanwhile, they're on the other court grabbing rebounds, going over the top and grabbing them. We get one offensive rebound, the other we get called for over the back. We don't block out very damn well, and we're not getting called, one or the other. That's where I'm frustrated. That's where my whole frustration comes in, offensive rebounds. The entire thing came down to offensive rebounds. They got every stinking offensive rebound, and we didn't get one of them. What else do you want to know?
That's about all we need to know. That's a guy who's got some things he's got to get off his chest. Not only was Arians not in that neighborhood, he wasn't even in the same zip code, but some folks heard his comments and started tripping. And in this case, some folks would include Brett Favre, who had this to say on his radio program.
True or not, I think the last person you want to call out after the first game of the year is Tom Brady. Now, maybe they had a mutual truce going into the game, going into the season. Hey, I'm going to be hard on you. I want the guys to know that we're going to treat you the same, even though technically I'm not. So are you okay with it? If they have that truce, great. If not, I think you're barking up the wrong tree.
All right, so I hear what the slinger is saying. Sort of. Not really. Actually, not at all. But it did work its way back to Arians. Because when Arians was asked about those comments, this is what he had to say.
Tom and I are fine, so I don't really care what other people think. So it's just what he and I think. And we left the stadium fine. We showed up today fine. So there ain't nothing to talk about.
And that right there is the correct answer. He's right. There ain't nothing to talk about. By the way, I've got absolutely no problem with Arians saying what he said about Brady after the game. It's accountability. And yes, I know that Tom apparently responded to that loss by reading some absurdist philosophy from the 40s. But this guy should be able to take criticism without losing his bleep, without rushing to Instagram to address and then bottle all the hate for future use. And even on top of that, Arians corrected himself yesterday and said that Evans was the one who was at fault for that first pick, which is great. Like, Arians is demonstrating the accountability that he's calling for. He's practicing what he preaches. So if Brady has any problem with what Arians said on Sunday, then that is on Brady. And then it's a much bigger problem than the two picks he had on Sunday. I mean, seriously, if comments that benign are going to, quote, jeopardize the relationship with Arians and the entire season, then Brady is not who we thought he was. He's not that mentally tough dude who battles through everything. Everything we're told about this guy, everything he wants you to know about this guy, is how mentally tough he is. A guy who, after a fistful of rings and the greatest career in NFL history, is still the guy who gets fuel from being a sixth round pick. Oh, and by the way, did you know that Tom Brady was a sixth round pick? Crazy, right? I mean, that's something I thought would come up a little more often than it does. How come nobody talks about that? Anyway, did we all also forget that Brady was coached by Bill Belichick? Coached hard by Belichick for 2 decades. And that Brady himself is famous for screaming at his teammates when they don't do their job. So we're supposed to believe that this dude is just going to fold when somebody points out that he didn't do his job. You think that guy can't take criticism? It says here he can, but if he can't, and Brett Favre is right, and there's something to this, man, their season's already over then. If Brady thinks those comments are anything other than Arians stating a fact after the game, then this is going to be a disaster in Tampa. And there won't be enough existential philosophy in the world to fix that. I mean, this dude of all dudes rushing to the gram to address the, quote, hate after only one game is really, really strange. But then again, this is a really strange dude who plays really strange word games with his teammates.
You're going to have to cool off after this heated debate because it's the friendship test.
One of my favorites. Woo-hoo.
Oh, man. I think I know you to a T, but I know you pretty well.
I think
this should be a piece of cake.
Me too. Here we go.
Yeah, that's hard to listen to. And some of his posts are hard to read. I mean, seriously, you're going to rush to the gram after one bad game where you played poorly? Hope that's not the case. Hope that's not the start of something new. And Arians did nothing wrong. 1-800-636-8686. What do you make of what you're seeing in Tampa so far? Meantime, it's been about 36 hours since the Clippers completed their collapse. And 36 hours later, it is no less spectacular. In fact, it's getting even better. I've got the update on the Clippers. The finger pointing has begun. In addition to that, I've got a Thursday night preview. We've already got some more ball. Bengals and America's team. Yes, I'm still on that bandwagon. Yes, they got the hell beat out of them in the opener. Normally, the Bengals are just what the doctor ordered. This time, I'm not so sure. I'll break that one down for you. Who you got tonight? Browns or Bengals? Additionally, I want to talk about the Jets. Man, they just can't help themselves. What is it with the Jets organization? The coach, the GM, the owner, they can't stop talking. And every time one of them opens up their pie hole, they make it even worse for themselves. And I've got another example of that too. Baseball, if you hate big market, super rich, perennial powerhouses, you're not going to like what's going on right now in Major League Baseball. Coming up on the end of that bizarre sprint to the finish, look who's there. The Dodgers and the Yankees. The Dodgers have been there all year long. The Yankees looked like they were circling the drain. Then they got right. That's coming up. 1-800-636-8686 is your telephone number. Starting with some reaction. And yes, we've got the U.S. Open. War the Fox crew, tailgating in Wingfoot's parking lot, watching the tournament on Joe Buck's forehead. Casey in New Hampshire. War Joe Klatt thinking players have four downs to get the ball in the cup. Hey, Casey, you mean Joel? Joel Klatt? If you're going to crack a guy, at least get his name right. Chris in New Hampshire? Seems like you got a problem with Fox's coverage of golf. Hey, Jim, the U.S. Open is starting. Great. Get our best college football color commentator and put him on the coverage. Signed, Fox probably, Drew in West L.A. Hey, Rome Slice. If you're still looking for a guest on the podcast, we have a ton of free time today and the entire weekend. Regards, Joel Klatt and Joe Buck. Geoff and Lincoln. You know, technically that's not accurate. Both those guys have other work. Over the weekend. Hey, Jim. What the hell was the old man Ritt doing wearing a tie? Holy crap, he is. I had to step up and look at that for a minute. What the hell is old man Ritt doing wearing a tie? Are you sure he doesn't have an interview with Ross for a playground maintenance position? Wayne and Raleigh. Well, man, why are you wearing a tie?
Game on.
That's not answering the question. I'm going to ask you one more time. Old man, why are you wearing a tie? Quote, here's some of the responses he just hit me with. Quote, I'm in the front row. Quote, it felt right. Let me tell you something, Ritt. I don't care how it feels. It looks all wrong, man. Don't be showing up here wearing a tie. You think you're better than me?
Finally.
Hey, Jim, I know I missed the What Is Your Beef segment this week. And today is not an Ask the Pros. However, my beef is with matching shirt exactly to your necktie guy. My question is, are you re-interviewing your staff for their current position like in the movie Office Space? Dress for the job you want, not the job you have. Am I Rit? Oh. Actually, he wrote, am I right, Rit? We're getting Rit some time with David August. Wore Alvin coming in tomorrow with a tux on. Jake in New York City. Friday is normally a casual dress day. I don't think that Alvin's going to roll in with a tux. Rit probably would. If Rit moved up to the front row and put a tie on, if I brought Rit into the studio for a sit down, there's no doubt he'd go black tie. He'd go tuxedo. He'd put a rug on it, man. Rit. Why are you wearing a tie, Rit? Dude, Jim, nice tie on Ike. Is he campaigning? He's already the president. Campaigning for what? We got a lot of viewers on CBS Sports Network. Put a rug on it, old man. When we come back, I've got Neil Brown, then I've got Joey Logano, and then I've got an open segment. Do business more powerfully during Dell's semi-annual sale. Save up to 45% on Dell computers and servers with Intel Core processors. It is time for you to upgrade to new modern devices with Windows 10. Also, you can save on electronics and accessories and free shipping on everything and special financing with Dell Business Credit. Call 877-ASK-DELL to talk to a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find just the right tech. 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. Or visit dell.com/businessdeals.
You're listening to The Jim Rome Show.
Welcome back. I'm Jim Rome. All right. Still laughing off that open. Rit, you're killing me, old man. This guy shows up in the front row wearing a tie. All right. Let's start the interview portion of the program. We are joined right now by the head football coach at West Virginia. Second season with the Mountaineers. Sun Belt Conference Coach of the Year in 2017. Led Troy to 3 straight bowl wins. West Virginia 1-0 on the season. And they are at number 11 Oklahoma State on September 26th. We are joined by Neil Brown. Neil, great to have you on. How are you?
Jim, doing well, man. How are you?
Good, good. Good to talk to you. So you start the year with that 56-10 win over Eastern Kentucky Saturday. How good, first of all, did it feel to be back playing football, and what did your team show you in the way it took care of its business?
Jim, I think for any college football team after this in the midst of a pandemic, to get on the field and play, I think it's a win. And for us to go out and take care of business like we should have done, frankly, we should have taken care of business in this opener. That's just a bonus. You know, probably as emotional game as any I've played, you know, or coached in, just because so much went in behind the scenes to making it possible. But it was fun. It was a fun day. We didn't have any fans in the stands other than family, so that's unfortunate as well. But it was fun. We played a lot of young people, and we're better. How much better? We'll find out on September 26th, but we're definitely better than we were a year ago.
West Virginia head football coach Neil Brown joining us. You know, Neil, back to that point, I talked to Dabo Swinney on the show yesterday. In fact, I've talked to a number of coaches who did have a game, and they all are saying the exact same thing that you just said, that it was as emotional an opener as they had ever had. Can you kind of lay that out for me? Why were you so taken by that? Why was that such a moving opportunity?
I just think back. You know, we shut everything down here on March 12th. And really didn't see our kids again until June 15th. Couldn't work with them until, I think, July 24th. And it was such a turbulent time, not only with COVID-19, but social unrest, you know, just everything that's going on in our country. You know, I'm 40 years old, and I don't know if leadership's ever been more difficult. We're in the most probably social unrest time of my lifetime. There's probably more political tension now than any other point in my life. And this is the only pandemic that we've ever had during my lifetime. So there's so many things that are going into leadership and you're having to navigate through. And then there was a momentum that we were going to play early. And then it didn't look like we were going to play. And then, you know, there's been a couple different tides. And to finally you know, get to the point where we got on the field in a safe manner. You know, we're testing three times a week and following the procedures and the protocols and seeing after an extended period of time that those work. I'm not saying they're perfect, but they do work, and they give you an opportunity to play. And so just to go through all that and have an opportunity to go out and play was extremely rewarding, not only for myself, but for our entire staff and our team as well.
West Virginia head football coach Neil Brown joining us once again. You know, Neil, on that same point, when you talk about leadership and how it's more challenging now than it's ever been at any time in your life, I see exactly what you're talking about. But to back that up, you talked about the fact that when you do not get the results that you want, you need to go into self-reflection mode. Like, a lot of coaches might blame the players. They might blame a lack of depth. They can blame any number of things. Why was it important for you to go into self-reflection mode, and what did you learn from that process?
Well, I think you have to. I think as a leader, one of the most important things you can do is you always self-reflect. And it has to be the first question you have to ask is, what can I do better? You know, what can we do better from a preparation standpoint? What can we do better, you know, whether it's conditioning, strength building, team chemistry, schematics in all three phases, what can we do better? And I think you always, as a head coach, you got to look at yourself first. And I think that it's also every situation is not cookie cutter. You know, we're able to turn the Troy program around and pretty quickly. And we had three tremendous years there. You know, 31 wins over a 3-year period, three bowl wins. You talked about it at the top here. But each job's different. And you know, I think what we did is, and I'll just talk to the schematics of it. Last year, offensively, we really struggled to run the football, and what we tried to do is go back and really simplify how we taught everything and really refined how we practice and how we installed. And we saw the rewards in game one. We ran the ball for, you know, 325-plus yards. Now we've got to continue to do, you know, I don't know if we'll run it for that many yards in the Big 12, but we've got to continue to have a plus rushing attack in our league. And that's just one example. You know, but I think you have to as a leader. You have to really look inward before you can look outward as far as fixing things.
Well, so, Neil, you ran the ball really effectively. You had a couple of running backs rush for 123 yards and two TDs each. And then Jarrett Deggy was 19 of 25, 228 yards and three TDs. What did you make of the way he ran the offense?
I thought Deggy was extremely efficient. You know, he started our last three games last year and was still able to redshirt. He's played a lot of football. You know, he was a 2-year starter at Bowling Green before he transferred here. He comes from a football family. His dad's a longtime high school football coach in the state of Texas. His brother, Seth, played for me at Texas Tech when I was a coordinator there. So a football family, loves the game, loves to study, loves to prepare. But I thought this was the most calm I'd seen him in a game. I thought he directed and managed the game extremely well. And I think it speaks well to what kind of seasons he's going to have. Our goal as a team is to be one of the most improved teams in the country. And for us to do that, several individuals are going to have high levels of improvement as well. And he's definitely one of them as a leader of our offense.
You also, in part of getting ready for this, you had separated the team into a gold group and a blue group. What was the separation based on? Was it years or something else, or was it more socially motivated?
So we've been extremely cautious during this entire pandemic. We were... You know, when the workouts could begin on June 15th, our guys never came into our building until actually the first day of fall camp. We set up weight rooms in the concourse of our stadium. We did treatment rehab outside. We worked in small groups. And then when we started the 6-week return to play, which there was 12 OTA, kind of NFL OTA-style workouts that you were allowed to have, what we did is we split our team into two units, a gold and a blue, and we didn't do it by depth chart or seniority or anything like that. What we did is we separated it by position. We made sure all the roommates were on the same team, and then the guys that hung out together socially outside of football, the guys that we knew were going to spend time together regardless, we put those, and that's how we divided it up. And we did that during the 12 OTA workouts. We did that for the first full 2 weeks of fall camp. And we met and worked out, walkthroughs, practice, meals, all those things were done separately.
Mm. Neil Brown joining us for a few more moments. You know, Neil, at this time when people's attention span is so short, it seems like nobody wants to pick up a book. You and I have talked about your book club and your love of reading in the past. So I want to bring this up before you go. Earlier this year, you did a reading of Have You Filled a Bucket Today on Facebook with your kids. For those who have not read it, what is Have You Filled a Bucket Today? And why is that something adults should learn from as well?
I laugh because I asked my 5 and my 9-year-old that every day. And here's where it started. It started right here. There's a nursery school on our campus here at West Virginia University where students go and they train that are going to do pre-K, teach pre-K and kindergarten. And my son, Dax, who's 5, when he was 4 going to pre-K there, they have a theme for every year. And their last year's theme was about bucket fillers. And there's a great book that goes along with it that you're talking about, and it's basically the theme of the story is everybody has a bucket and you want to fill others' buckets, all right? And you fill others' buckets by building them up and positive comments and those things like that. But and I laugh when you said that because I still ask my 5-year-old Dax and my 9-year-old Ansley before I let them out of the car, before I leave the house, I'm like, hey, make sure you fill somebody's bucket today. So it's a good book for everybody that's listening, that's a parent or a teacher out there. It's a great lesson to be learned in that book.
I'm so glad I asked you that because I feel like right before you came on, I was running around emptying the buckets of my staff. I think I need to hear that. Neil Brown, my guest, he's the head football coach.
I'm guilty of doing that too, Jim.
Good. He is the head football coach of West Virginia. They're coming off a big win to start the year, but they've got a major opportunity and challenge coming up against Oklahoma State on September 26th. Neil, it's always great to have a conversation with you. Thank you so much. Good luck.
Jim, appreciate it. It's always great to be in the jungle.
Always good to have you in the jungle, Neil. Well done. Great talking to you, as always. My man is so conversational. Love that. Damn, I don't know, Rit. I'm running around emptying your bucket, and he's right. We should be looking to fill other buckets up. All right. Hey, Garrett, great tie. Dude, that is looking sharp. Good move. And that thing about me telling you to put a rug on it, I take that back. You look awesome, bro. Just filling buckets. 1-800-636-8686. My thanks to the coach. Hey, Rome. Arians calling out Brady after the first game is not a big deal. Regards, telling your wife she has had better haircuts. Stephen PHX. Drew in West LA. Dear Fox, didn't get the U.S. Open this year. Should have put in a lower bid only to increase the estimate later. Signed contractors. The contractor thread just came out of nowhere. And I'm doing everything I can to kill it, and it won't die. Mailman Casey tweets, Jim, does Rit wearing a tie have anything to do with Hawks crack at NBA coaches not wearing suits? Is Rit being harassed by Hawk to dress more professionally? Ike in 2020. Yeah, Adam Hawk did tweet, quote, I hate that these NBA coaches aren't wearing suits. Yo, bro, that's not helping your rep that you know nothing about sports, that you're tweeting in the middle of the playoffs about what the coaches are wearing or not wearing. You're not helping your own cause. There I go again, emptying a bucket. Adam, good take. Very different take and a good take and a throwback. Well done, Adam. Keep it up. Keep tweeting. I'm just filling buckets. I'm not going to be the guy to empty buckets. Coach made a great point. That's why I talk to Neil Brown. When we come back, another guy, Joey Logano. Love Joey Logano. Looking forward to that one. That's coming up next. So we're going back to back. That does not mean that you won't get through or can't get through. In fact, I want all your calls. Filling up buckets is the new nice radio. Literally, you can call. And if you're worried about how it might go, don't be. It can only go well.
Nice radio.
Neil Brown, I mean that. I'm glad that he shared that story because I was going down the wrong path. I mean, I would have been on Rit all day long for that tie. Now I think it's a good move. It's a professional move. It's a strong move. It's a manly move. Joey Logano coming up next, but first, here is your...
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
I'm telling you, I'm having such a good day. Already, we're having a great day. Moving right through hour number one, I am Jim Rome. I am live in Southern California. Why am I having a good day? I've got great people to talk to. Not you clones. Well, some of you clones. We just had West Virginia head football coach Neil Brown, the president of the Denver Nuggets basketball operations, Tim Connolly, coming up next hour. But right now, we are joined by the 2018 NASCAR Cup Series champ. He is the driver of the number 22 Shell Pennzoil Ford Mustang for Team Penske. 2015 Daytona 500 winner, qualified for the NASCAR playoffs, back-to-back third-place finishes in the last two races, two wins, eight top fives, 16 top tens this year. Bass Pro Shops Night Race is Saturday. Joey Logano is my guest. Joey, it's great to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing good, Jim. How you been?
Good, good. In fact, let me rephrase that, Joey. Since you and I have spoken a couple of times over the course of the season, now that we are into September and into the playoffs, how are you doing and how is that vibe around your team?
Oh, it's game time. This is the best part of the year. I tell everyone it's like Christmas. You just don't you see that big prize at the end of these 10 weeks of the playoffs and see that championship trophy there. That's the goal. That's what you shoot for, and this is the opportunity ahead of us. We've been working all year preparing for these moments, and we've come out of the gates pretty strong here. A couple third-place finishes, leading laps in contention for a win, and we put ourselves in a pretty good spot for Bristol this weekend to get through the first round. So that's a good sign, and that intensity will keep ratcheting up as the playoffs go. But like I said, with the right attitude and enjoying every moment of it, and embracing the pressure, it ends up being a pretty fun experience.
Joey Logano joining us. He's the driver of the number 22 Shell Pennzoil Ford Mustang for Team Penske. I like that note or that thing you just said about embracing the pressure. Why is it so important to embrace the pressure, and how do you go about doing that?
I've missed the playoffs before and didn't have the pressure. I've learned that pressure is a privilege after that. That is an awful feeling, not having the pressure. You want to have that moment. So I think maybe the lessons I learned that year in 2017 was probably the maybe the most valuable lesson of my career of how much you really want it when it's not there. So you value those moments when you're not in the battle that you want to be in.
We're talking to Joey Logano. You're not going to appreciate that. Now, you've had the two wins in Vegas and Phoenix, and then everything shut down. Then it restarts. So it might have taken a little bit of time to rediscover your rhythm with this really unusual schedule, but now you're stacking top tens. What has been the biggest difference for you and the team of late?
Yeah, you know what it is? We're not practicing anymore, and that makes it kind of hard to grow a lot as a team. When we're out there working on our car and trying new things and tuning our car into where we want to, you're able to learn a lot before the race starts. Well, now everything we learn is post race, and you can't make adjustments that the caliber of the ones that you want during the race. So, you learn everything after the race, and you go to a racetrack that's not even close to the one you just raced at. And you got to wait a few months to go back to the same racetrack you just were at to actually learn something, to put what you've learned into use. So, that stuff is probably made our growing curve a little bit steeper than we wanted it to. That being, with a new crew chief this year, a new team, all those things, and obviously the social distancing and doing everything through, virtual meetings and all this, like it's just taken a longer time than expected. So trying to find a way that makes it worked during this pandemic as a team. And then, over time, getting our cars closer to where they need to be as soon as the race starts. And it seems like here lately, we've gotten a lot closer to start off and closer where we were earlier in the year.
We are talking to Joey Logano. Now, Joey, you've got a night race at Bristol, and there are going to be fans in the stands. How excited are you to see them back? And how aware are you of the fans during a race?
At Bristol, you're pretty aware of it. Bristol's a half-mile racetrack. It's the fastest half-mile we go to, high bank. They call it the last great Coliseum because it's literally like that. And, if you race there and nobody's there, it's a weird vibe. It's a stadium atmosphere. And we're in the all-star race there a few months ago, and they had some fans there. And in here, once again, with fans, it just it lights the place up. Even with, 30,000 fans or so in there, it feels... I guess it's that many people can make a lot of noise still. You know, whether it's during driver intros or before the race starts, you still see everybody's, you know, camera phones flashing and stuff, especially during a night race like this. And it's honestly, I mean, Bristol's the best racetrack we go to. It really is. It puts on an amazing race. So it's cool to be able to put on a good show for the fans.
Joey Logano joining us here in the jungle. Joey, let me ask you about something that happened last month. It was announced that Eric Jones and Joe Gibbs Racing would be going their separate ways. Jones said that he was surprised by the news. The story goes that you and he may not be especially close, but when you saw that news, you reached out to him. Why was that, and what made you do so?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a very similar story to what I've gone through, and I never really talked to Eric before that moment, but, you know, I used to race for Joe Gibbs Racing, started there at a very young age. Didn't perform to the level that I needed to, and found myself out looking for a job. And kind of like I was talking about a minute ago about not making the playoffs. Well, you know, and you learn so much in those moments. Well, it's the same thing when you lose your job. You learn more about yourself than ever, and you know who your real friends are, who's really behind you, and about yourself. You know what makes you tick. And having a second opportunity obviously is meant so much to me that I can show up as a, you know, at the time a 21-year-old had 4 or 5 years experience and kind of knew what I wanted a little bit more. Well, he's just gone through the same exact story. So I felt obligated. I felt like I needed to say something and tell him about my experiences and maybe just bring his spirits up a little bit, because I remember those years being the hardest ones of my life. And it sounds so crazy because people are saying, oh, well, you're still a race car driver, what are you complaining about? But you know, and that's true, that's 100% true. People are going through things way harder than that, but I do know for me personally it was a hard time, and if I can help somebody through that, that's just the right thing to do.
I think that's really interesting. Like, he made the point that lunch gave him hope because of the fact that you've gone on to win more than 20 races and a cup championship since. But to your other point, Joey, that, hey, how bad can it be? You're still a race car driver. Fact of the matter is, if you get fired, it's gonna rattle you, right? It's going to get into your head a little bit. It might shake your confidence. Ultimately, you might be better in the way you come back from that, but that's understandable. How could you go through something like that and not have it affect you and not have it affect your confidence? It's going to.
There's no, of course. there's no way it doesn't, you know, and I know that I've lived through that. And, you know, you, going to a race where you feel like you have a team around you that doesn't believe in you. You can only imagine in any sport what that's like, you know, and you're not going to really perform to the level that you think you're capable of, because eventually you're going to believe the people that are around you. You know, it's the whole thing that your parents taught you, right? Tell me who you're hanging out with, I'll tell you how you're going to end up. You know, it's the same thing in a team environment. And, you know, like I said, just he has talent. He's been around the sport long enough. He's won races before. It's the same exact position I was in, and you just get in the right position at the right team, and, you know, 3 years later, four years later, we won the championship, you know? So, and if you told me that 4 years ago before that moment, I would never believe you. And so I just, like I said, just keep his hopes up and something will turn out.
You bet. It's a great story. Now, in the past, you and I have talked about the work that you and your family are doing with the Joey Logano Foundation. Last week, you announced that the foundation would be making 9 grants of $22,000 to charities to help kids in crisis and to provide COVID relief. What's it mean to you to be in a position where you can support organizations like that?
Yeah, and that's the why, right? That's the why you go racing. That's the why we do what we do, because honestly, at the end of the day, Jim, trophies are pretty empty, right? They're all empty cups. That's what they are. You know, if you can fill them up with love and passion and helping people, that's where they actually have a meaning and can do something. And that's what the Joey Logano Foundation is all about, the supporters of it. We've been able to do a lot of great things for COVID relief with a $1 million fund. And we went through that to really help a lot of individuals during this moment. And now getting back to our roots is giving second chances, like I got in my career, to children and young adults in times of crisis. So a lot of kids that have been put into the foster care system, group homes, you know, those type of things that people that need, you know, resources, role models, and things like that. So, yes, for the rest of the season here, last, you know, 8 weeks from now to the end now, we're doing $22,000 a week to these organizations, because as you can imagine, this year with what COVID is, getting the funding for things like this have kind of gone by the wayside as so many people have their own issues they have to deal with. It makes it harder for them to make ends meet and to help these kids and have someone believe in them, right? That's what they need. They just need somebody to believe in what they can be and spark that little bit of fire inside of them. And it really turn out to be a contributing member of society. That's what we want these young men and women to be.
Clearly, you are filling buckets. Good job. Well done, Joey. He's the driver of the number 22 Shell Pennzoil Ford Mustang for Team Penske. The Bass Pro Shops Night Race is Saturday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. He is your 2018 Series champ, 2015 Daytona 500 winner. Joey, appreciate you, the relationship, and always having you on the show. Thanks so much.
You're the man. Thanks, dude. See you soon.
You too. Joey Logano. He's the best. NASCAR. Again, a topic coming up big. Old man Ritt, I don't know if you have that disclaimer, but if you do, go ahead and hit push or hit play. Or don't. Fix your tie, dude.
Good guy. Top performer. They know what they're doing.
Respects the fans.
There's no better league to deal with than NASCAR.
Gives back, appreciates the sport, has time for the fans.
And NASCAR has won me over.
I like it. I get it.
They call on time. They do good interviews. They have good attitudes. It's big. It's not going away. Good interview, shows up on time.
Every one of those guys is like that.
It won me over. I will say for the record once again, I've done a 180.
He's not Tony Stewart. Rusty Wallace is my favorite guest.
And if it's not Rusty Wallace, it's Clint Boyer and his bus driver, Curtis.
I did not break the pace car.
Carl Edwards, class act, Trevor Bayne. The best energy.
And I love Jeff Gordon.
I can't pick favorites, but Jimmy Johnson's my favorite.
And Brad Keselowski is right there.
Incredible. I think I've literally spoken to anybody who has ever gotten behind the wheel of a stock car. There's hour number one. Open segment to start hour number two. Keep coming. You're in the jungle. I'm Jim Rome. We'll